Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, the 29th of July, 2016. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. Governor Bill Walker cut permanent fund dividends today to $1,000 per person, about half of the projected amount. The cut was one of a series of reductions that Walker made to lower the state's budget by $1.5 billion. Walker says he made the changes to reduce the amount of savings the state must spend to cover the budget, and he says he cut dividends to preserve PFDs into the future. The state is on track to exhaust its savings in 4 years without cuts. He says he'll take the blame for reducing PFDs, and he expressed hope that this will make it easier for lawmakers to approve his long-term fiscal plan for state government.
So what I've tried to do is take away from them the risk that they may suffer in at the polls, so that that's off the table. And any excuses now are just pure politics.
Walker vetoed a total of $1.29 billion from the state budget. Cuts include a $58 million reduction to schools, including shifting $30 million in bond reimbursement to local schools. The state will delay $430 million in oil and gas tax credits into future years. The University of Alaska will see a $10 million cut. The governor also restored a 27% cut to public radio funding. In addition to the vetoes, Walker delayed $250 million in road and bridge repairs, and he shut down two mega projects, the Kinnick Arm Bridge and the Susitna-Watonna Dam. Walker says the state can't balance its budget through only cuts.
We're not cutting our way into prosperity. We're using the only tools we have available to us to do all we can to reduce the deficit.
Walker signed the operating mental health and capital budgets for the fiscal year that starts Friday. He also signed a bill that will restructure oil and gas tax credits, but not by as much as he wanted. And a road on Kuprinoff Island proposed between Cake and Petersburg is now on hold because of Alaska's budget crisis. Among his announcements from this morning, Governor Walker said the state would be pausing 8 highway road projects around the state. Projects are state-funded, and they include a proposed road link across the northern side of Kuprinoff Island. In a press conference this morning, Walker explained that decision.
That's another $250 million that we're pausing those until we have a fiscal plan, that we know where we're going to be. We're trying to, you know, companies in situations that we are, they try to conserve cash, and I guess that's what we're trying to do in that particular move. So, again, infrastructure projects, road projects, it certainly put a lot of Alaskans to work, needs to be done. We put a hold on that until we have the fiscal plan with a balanced budget.
The Alaska Department of Transportation this spring advertised for companies to do survey work on the proposed route across the Kuprinoff Island. The other state projects on hold are in Fairbanks, the Mat-Su Valley, and Anchorage. House Finance Co-Chair and Fairbanks Republican Representative Steve Thompson criticized Walker's decision this morning, saying, quote, "We don't have a lot of roads in Alaska, so when you cut 8 statewide road construction projects totaling $250 million, you're cutting a lot of jobs," unquote. The governor also announced he was shutting down 2 large projects, the Kinnick Arm Bridge and a dam planned for the Susitna River. U.S. Forest Service is a step closer to choosing a route for a proposed electrical transmission line to the Southeast Alaska community of Cake. The agency last week released a draft decision on the Cake-Petersburg intertie. Once it's finalized, the environmental review could authorize the construction of a 60-mile-long power line across Tongass National Forest land on Kuprinoff. Here's more in this report. The 60-mile-long transmission line would link Cake to the electrical grid in Petersburg and hydropower from the Southeast Alaska Power Agency's plants near Wrangell and Ketchikan. John Jensen is chairman of the board of that organization formed by Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan.
I would certainly like to see it just mainly help out Cake. It seems like their economy has suffered and their community's shrunk in size, and it's been really hard on them having these high fuel prices, that's how they generate their power, so it makes it pretty difficult for them to run much with electricity, so this would definitely be a benefit.
SEPA's hydroelectricity would be cheaper and cleaner than the diesel generators that currently power Cake, but the cost of building a new power line across Kuprinoff Island could be a stumbling block still. A 2014 estimate puts the price tag at $57 million and up, depending on the route. The Forest Service's final environmental impact statement and record of decision opts to go with one of three proposed routes across Kuprinoff. It follows a road corridor granted by the federal government for the eventual construction of a road across the northern side of the island, and about 34 miles of the route would parallel existing logging roads across national forest land. Tom Parker, planning resource staff at the Petersburg Ranger District, explains how the power line corridor would look along the portion of the route visible from Frederick Sound.
You know, so we're looking at anywhere from a 150 to a 300-foot corridor, which is right now, if when people, the forest users, go out on the roads, you know, you're looking at a 100-foot, 50, usually it's 50 feet center line. And it just depends on the type of trees, vegetation that they find, how wide the corridor needs to be. But in the special use permit that will be given to them, it will be up to a 300-foot swath.
Trees would be cut along the route and kept clear from the power line. The project anticipates single wooden poles and three transmission wires along the route. In his record of decision, Tongass Forest Supervisor Earl Stewart acknowledges that a different alternative, called the Center-South Route, has a smaller overall footprint than the selected northern route, but Stewart notes that the northern route would mean fewer stream crossings, and the agency's Parker explains other reasons for not choosing to go through the center part of the island.
Well, on the Center-South Route, there's a lot of concern. When you come across the center of Kuprinoff Island, it's a lot of muskeg, and the cost for putting in this artificial matting, they call it, would be more, be a longer distance, be a higher cost when it comes to that section of it. There'd be two water crossings as opposed to just the one water crossing coming across the north end of the Wrangell Narrows. So that, you know, and several other reasons.
That artificial matting would be brought in temporarily to install the power poles across muskeg along the route. Forest Supervisor Stewart also notes possible conflicts with commercial fisheries in Duncan Canal, where the center-south route would require a submarine cable crossing.
From Kuprinoff's standpoint, we still feel a southern route is the better solution to everything.
That's Tom Reinhartz, mayor of the city of Kuprinoff, which had registered concerns with the selected alternative along the northern side of the island.
With the preliminary information that we saw, the city had a number of concerns that needed to be dealt with, that dealt with going through environmentally sensitive areas, you know, areas that are wildlife habitats, things like that. And we made a number of comments regarding the preliminary documents that were issued some time ago.
Reinhartz says Kuprinoff will be reviewing the draft decision to see if those concerns have been addressed, and if not, file additional comments. The Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, a regional environmental group, also supported the center-south route for minimizing impacts to wetlands and deer habitat. The organized village of Cake, the tribal government in that community, submitted letters of support for the project, as did the Inside Passage Electrical Cooperative, which sells diesel power to Cake. And it's long been a dream of Cake's former mayor, Henrich Kadake.
I just real happy that it's moving forward, because, you know, no matter what kind of things happen, you know, that Enertai would be still a big part of our economy in Cake.
Electrical rates in Cake are much higher than in nearby Petersburg, especially for businesses. The community is pursuing a small local hydro project that would generate a portion of energy needed by the town, but Kadake says even with that project, his town needs power from the Enertai.
I just hope that it'll keep moving, you know, even if it has to sit on the shelf for a few years, it would be still a good thing for us that it's there and it's ready. You know, if there's ever money available, it will happen.
The environmental review looks at building a power line without a road along its entire length. That's despite efforts by the state of Alaska to construct a road link along that northern route road corridor. If it is built, it could lower the cost of maintaining a power line. And while the money's been secured for the road project, there's no funding identified yet to build a power line. A notice on the Forest Service's decision is set to be published in the Federal Register at the beginning of July. There's a 45-day objection period that runs until August 12th. A final record of decision could be out at the end of the 45-day period, depending on whether there are any further objections. In other local news, work has started on a $1.3 million loading bulkhead near Petersburg's drive-down dock. Tamiko, the company awarded the project earlier this year, has started dredging the area that will become a new spot for mainly commercial boats to moor while loading and unloading. Harbor Master Glo Wallen says long-term parking in South Harbor was shut down as work began and will remain closed for the duration of the project.
That'll be shut down during this entire project because we need space to work and set up and, you know, store things and all that kind of stuff while the project's going on. But once it's done, then we'll revert it back to some long-term parking. Probably not quite as much as what was there before, but there will be some.
Wolin says while parking will remain closed, parts of the harbor on the southern side will still be open. That includes gear storage for commercial fishermen, as well as the drive-down ramp and float itself.
We just ask people to be aware that there is big equipment. They have a work area that we have allowed them as this project, but they won't be shutting the egress in and off of that drive-down float at all.
Work will be completed no later than the end of November, and Wallen hopes it will be done even sooner than that in September. In the meantime, she says the harbor should not be affected too much.
Be aware that we have big pieces of equipment working and lots going on, so there might be small, short shutdowns, but nothing that should really bother people.
Wallen expects dredging to be completed soon on that project, while Tamiko will move on to other stages this summer. Ketchikan's community hospital just grew by about 70,000 square feet. The city-owned hospital, which is operated by Peace Health, has celebrated the completion of a major addition last weekend with a barbecue and tours of the new space. Layla Carey has more on that story.
Space was a recurring theme of the Peace Health Ketchikan Medical Center celebration. Now there's space for sick kids to wait for the doctor in a separate room. Space for psychiatric patients to wait privately for an appointment, space dedicated to putting on and removing casts, and space for all the complicated equipment needed for a surgery. That last item is a biggie. The hospital's surgery suite was state-of-the-art when it was built in the 1960s, but a lot has changed since then. Hospital surgery manager Kim Schwartz was all smiles during the tour. Standing in one of the new procedure rooms, she says the new surgery suite will change everything for the better.
I'm near tears, seriously. And I just look around and I can think ahead right now of how we're going to utilize this space. And to me, that's really exciting. And I can't wait till our team is in here and we're practicing how, because we don't even know our workflow yet. This is so big. I got lost in here this morning. This is really so different. It's so different. It's 100% different than what we're used to.
In hospital room 3, the biggest OR in the new suite, a large photograph shows the cramped conditions of the old operating rooms. Hospital Foundation Director Matt Eisenhower points out how the 60s era OR is crammed with modern equipment.
So almost all of these pieces of equipment that you see in this picture are now going to be hung from the ceiling, which allow for efficiency of space as well as a sterile field, which is always something that's very important in the operating rooms.
The rooms sound echoey because they're empty. While construction is complete, the furnishings and most of the equipment have not yet been moved in. And then, as Schwartz mentioned, employees need to practice in their new digs and figure out how to work in such a large space.
We're so used to functioning now where, you know, we could just yell at each other.
Need walkie-talkies.
Yeah, that's what we actually said. I said, we're going to have to get them, because if we're way over there, right now we're just like feet apart. So now you're way out there to communicate with these guys in here. We're either going to have to call them or have a walkie-talkie.
It'll be an adjustment. But
yeah,
a good
it'll
one.
Be a good one, yeah. I can't wait.
It's not just new space. There's new equipment, too. One piece is a digital X-ray machine that sends images wirelessly and in mere seconds to the rest of the equipment. A new MRI, a magnetic resonance imaging machine, also will be installed in the new hospital area. Another addition to the hospital is the ever-scarce and ever-important parking. Underneath the new space is a single-level parking garage with room for about 50 vehicles. That's where the ribbon-cutting ceremony and barbecue took place. Sister Andrea Nenzel chairs the Peace Health System Board and gave a little history of Ketchikan's partnership with the Sisters of St. Joseph, who were asked in 1922 to staff a new hospital in Ketchikan.
The sisters gave an enthusiastic response by sending three young sisters to run Little Flower Hospital in what seemed to them a very remote island in far off Alaska.
Nenzel says healthcare in Ketchikan has always been about neighbor helping neighbor, and that cooperative spirit is what made the hospital upgrade possible. The hospital building is owned by the City of Ketchikan, which funded the majority of the expansion's $62 million construction cost through a voter-approved bond package. City Mayor Lou Williams III told the gathering that the city values the hospital as a way to diversify and stabilize the local economy.
And we want to always keep it up to date and something that people in this region will utilize. And that all affects us in our economics and people wanting to live here and people we can enjoy living a wonderful life here in Ketchikan.
As the ceremony came to a close, Ketchikan Indian Community Board President Irene Dundas told the group that Peace Health was a good partner to KIC too, and it expands the health care offered through the tribe's clinic. She had a gift for the hospital, a drum with a painting of a medicine man healing a patient. Dundas and some of her family members sang a song with the help of that drum in honor of the new hospital space. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
See some photos of the new hospital space and pictures from the ribbon cutting ceremony on our website, kfsk.org, along with this story. For local news, I'm Joe Vignicki. Coming up on KFSK Street Beat Music, Pat Murray, your host this afternoon. And at 2:30, it's Sidelines Sports. Then the High Country at 2:40 with Milena Marvin. At 4 o'clock, All Things Considered, local news and updated weather at 4:30. And Alaska News Nightly on at 6 o'clock, followed by Ebb Tide Music at 6:30 with Steve Barry. 9 o'clock, The Folk Sampler with Mike Flynn. And 10 o'clock, Radio Free Petersburg with Ben Wasilowski. Coming up next, weather forecast and local messages.